We have something very special for you right now. A little bit of info on Australian sovereignty, as it turns out. Our special guest today is Wayne Levitt, coming at us from the nice desert state of Australia. Wayne, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you for having me.
You're very, very welcome. Now, you were telling me that you have some, unconventional news to spread, and you have chosen specifically to lay it on us here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I would love it if you could just preface for myself as well as the listeners just exactly who you are and what it is you're doing, mate.
I used to be principal solicitor of a small legal firm in the western suburbs of Sydney. We engaged in litigation, principally crime. Most other solicitors tend to do conveyancing, which is buying and selling of real estate and so forth. And as a consequence, because we did litigation, we weren't. And as luck would have it, I was just about to close the office early and give myself an early break for the weekend when a call came through. My secretary was speaking to someone else on the other line. I took the call, and it was a strange man telling me a strange story about how the Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act was invalid and how the Governor-General of Australia wasn't properly appointed and how Queen Elizabeth II was a war criminal, stuff like that. I should have told him to keep taking the medication and I'd give him a call on Monday, but because I was a bit bored, I said, oh, have you got any material you could forward to me? And he sent me 4.5 pages by way of fax. I read that material and I was shocked. I spent the next 6 weeks, every spare moment that I had, trying to prove the material to be incorrect, but everything I found, in fact, confirmed its truth. I got involved with some people who were heading an organisation trying to rectify Australia's horrendous constitutional problems, and as a consequence of bringing a number of cases in various courts of Australia, including the High Court of Australia, I lost my practising certificate, so I could no longer work as a solicitor, and that happened on the 28th of November 2000.
And what have you been doing since being out of the job as a solicitor? Because there's an awful lot of work out there for people who have a sharp mind such as yours.
It's very difficult when you've got the Law Society and the state, or New South Wales state government, and the Australian government on your back. They really hate the information that I've found and the information that I'm continuing to find about Australia's constitutional problems. It's not only Australia, it also affects New Zealand and Canada, and it's having a lot of impact on the world, and therefore it's been very difficult for me.
So specifically, you said that the Australian Constitution is void and the Queen is a war criminal. Could you divulge more into detail about this?
Yeah, sure. Bear in mind, this also applies to New Zealand and Canada. But if your listeners are interested, they'll have to do their own research. But the broad parameters of what I'm saying apply to all of those countries. In 1900, the Parliament at Westminster, the British Parliament, passed into law the Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act. That act defines the Commonwealth of Australia as a self-governing colony of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland. Already there's a problem. There hasn't been a United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland since about 1922. It's now the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. So the Queen that's mentioned, or the King that's mentioned in Australia's constitution as sovereign of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, hasn't existed since 1922. That also applies to Canada and New Zealand, so that's a big problem. Second problem, Australia, New Zealand, Canada are defined as colonies of the United Kingdom. If that's the case, and if these Constitution Acts are still valid, how can these countries be members of the General Assembly of the United Nations and have any of the treaties that they've signed? Are they now up for grabs because they've been signed by countries that are defined in their constitutions, which is the first document at the top of the pyramid, the first legal document that defines everything else? Those constitutions define those countries as colonies, and colonies cannot be represented in the General Assembly of the United Nations. This may sound all very esoteric, but it's not. The Japanese government has this information. Currently, the Australian government has a case in the International Court of Justice against the Japanese for whaling in Australian Antarctic waters. And the Japanese suddenly have this information and intend to use it to prevent a court case going anywhere, because Australia doesn't have standing. You have to be a nation to take a case in the International Court of Justice, and our constitution defines us as a colony. I'll give you another example. Just say you're in New Zealand and you get voted into your parliament, and for the first time in history you get unanimous votes. Everybody in your electorate votes you in, and you present an act, a bill of law to the New Zealand parliament. Let's call it the ABC Act. And everybody in parliament is so taken aback and amazed by what you've done that it gets a unanimous vote all through the parliament. That bill of law cannot become an act of law until it gets the royal signature, the signature of Queen Elizabeth II, who herself, in fact, is appointed by the British Parliament at Westminster. But her signature is given by her vice-regal representative, which is a Governor-General. Now, that Governor-General may have been chosen by the New Zealand Prime Minister or the New Zealand Parliament, but nonetheless, they're appointed by a queen, a foreign queen halfway around the world, who herself has been appointed by a foreign parliament, the Westminster Parliament. So the way that sovereignty works out it is, you've got the Westminster Parliament, you've got Queen Elizabeth, and you've got her representative in New Zealand, and then the people come way down the bottom, fourth. That's how the system works, and the Japanese know about this. Various other nations know about this. The Chinese are aware of it, the Sri Lankans, the Burmese. If you leave New Zealand, you get a New Zealand passport. If you get into trouble overseas, that passport is next to useless, because if push comes to shove, the country that you're in will say to the New Zealand government, well, how can you issue a passport for the nation of New Zealand when your constitution defines you as a colony of the UK. This happened to a gentleman in Australia, well, a Chinese-born gentleman by the name of Stern Hu. You can look him up on the internet, S-T-E-R-N, Hu, H-U. He came to Australia, he took Australian citizenship, he went back working for BHP in China, and now he's in a Chinese jail, and the Australian government have their hands tied behind their back because they know that if they put too much pressure on the Chinese government, that government will announce to the world the constitutional problems of Australia, and Australia's currency and stock market have got about 24 hours life left in them.
Is this by chance why Stephen Harper closed down the Canadian Parliament for 90 to 120 days because the Governor-General?
To be honest, I'm not aware. I'm not that au fait with what's going on in Canada and New Zealand, because I'm putting all my effort into Australia. But I can tell you one other thing. Assuming I am wrong, assuming that the Australian Constitution is valid, we have proof that back in the 1990s, a Governor-General of Australia was appointed by a forged document. And remember this, if the root is poisoned, the fruit is poisoned. What happened was, we got hold of an appointment document for an Australian Governor-General, and we went over and organised a meeting with the UK's Lord Chancellor, who at the time was a gentleman by the name of Baron Falconer. When that document was slid across the desk to him, before it had even stopped sliding, he said, "That's a forgery." We said, "No, no, this actually came from the government printer's office in Canberra." He said, "No, no, that's a forgery, because the royal seal, the design of the royal seal on that document was changed, and this document is dated after the design of the royal seal was changed. Not only that, the royal seal went from the custody of the foreign secretary, who at the time was Jack Straw, to me. And I never put the royal seal on that document."
This is the same Jack Straw that blocked investigations of abuse of children and stuff like that in state institutions.
We call him Strawman Jack. We then went and investigated the public record, and we found that the Queen was nowhere near the place specified on the face of the appointment document on the date the appointment document was allegedly signed. Now, we don't know who forged her signature, but I've got a pretty good idea, and I don't think that this person did it out of the goodness of their heart. I reckon they got some Australian taxpayers' money put into a bank account somewhere. And if that happened in Australia, and it did, and we can prove it, then it's fair to say that it's probably happened for New Zealand and Canada as well.
Well, it turns that our governor, well, not our governor-generals, our chief justices and justice ministers meet behind closed doors every year to coordinate legislation. And it's all behind closed doors, so nobody knows how the legislation is going through. And it's very apparent to me that the levels of secrecy concerning government and the actual reality behind it are tops. You know, it's almost as if you can't outdo this level of secrecy, because the public is completely in the dark, about as in the dark as you can get, really. And, you know, shedding light on this subject becomes difficult because of the quantity of research it takes to, in fact, back it up. Now, you're not talking about this as if you're just, you know, you made it up or anything. You've actually got documentation, and even you've sent me some with the Buckingham Palace logo on it. And can you explain to me just how the real ruling system actually works here? I mean, currently the perception is the people elect their representatives, and their representatives then rule the country. That's not the case, is it?
No, I'm not going to say it's a conspiracy. I'll leave that to others. But you'll find if you do internet searches, for example, at the moment there are a lot of pubs closing down in the United Kingdom. There are a lot of pubs closing down in Australia and all over the world, and they're closing down for the same reasons, taxation and anti-smoking legislation. That's one example. If you look up power prices all around the world, power prices are rising. All these things generally tend to be coordinated, and what we have tried to do is use this information to try and make it as difficult as we can for the Australian government to force them to actually rectify the situation and give the Australian people back the ability to have a say in how they're governed, because at the moment it's a joke. It's just a joke. I'll give you another example about how this is being used against probably New Zealand, but definitely Australia. Australia has been given vast territories in the Antarctic, and those territories have been given by the UN. The Americans currently have bases on Australia's Antarctic territories. Hundreds of people down there looking for resources in, allegedly, Australia's Antarctic territory. And the reason that they're down there, and the reason the Japanese are down there hunting for whales in our territory, is because they understand that the United Nations can't give a colony, whether it's a self-governing colony or not, territory. You have to be a nation. And these people know that Australia's not a nation. I assume... The similar attitude exists towards New Zealand, and the New Zealand government and the Australian government won't do anything about it because their lives are pretty good at the moment, and they've got great superannuation and pension payouts, so they'll just keep the people in the dark and do the best they can.
Keeping the people in the dark is not that easy either. It requires quite the massive budget, methinks. Where,
sure.
And where exactly does all this money come from?
Very interesting question. I know in the case of the bribery that's that has obviously gone on here, I can't prove it, but the bribery that's gone on to places, well, for example, the Jack Straw and so forth, would have come from the Australian taxpayer, so that they can keep travelling around the world on passports that are not worth the paper they're written on. And I assume the same happens in New Zealand and Canada. It's a very similar system. But the reason this initially happened was because 100 years ago, Britain had the strongest navy in the world, bar none. They had all these colonies, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and these countries really didn't have much in the way of military wherewithal. So they decided, look, it's all right, we've got basically autonomy, we're self-governing, we can always rely on Mother England to protect us. What happened was, towards the end of the First World War, the Great War, the war to end all wars, Woodrow Wilson, who in my opinion has to be America's worst president, decided that in order to stop the internecine warfare and the bloodletting, he would organise an international body which came to be known as the League of Nations. Now, the British realised that if they kept all their colonies, those colonies wouldn't get a vote, because you have to be a nation to join the League of Nations. So what they did surreptitiously towards the end of the First World War was they granted New Zealand, Australia, Canada, South Africa their independence and sovereignty, and they said, oh, we're doing this because of the great sacrifices you've made for us during the Great War. South Africa took that opportunity, and became an independent and sovereign nation. In Australia, New Zealand and Canada, the politicians fudged it, because they thought, well, if we do this, we won't be able to rely on Mother England to protect us. And that's why this freedom, which was granted by the British in